Stardew Valley blasts into the esports scene, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News Podcast. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, click that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on a single episode. Let's just say if you're new here, we cover a wide variety of tech, gadget, and gaming news, all slammed into one, hopefully, half-hour show or less or a little bit more. Depends on the news cycle, depends on the day, and depends on how much we have to get through. Also, we have trivia and today in tech history, so don't miss out on that. Speaking of which, I don't have any cool intro segue music here to introduce the next segment. I'm still working on it, but trivia. So for those of you who are listening to episode number 82, I asked you a question. That question was, the iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and HomePod are all products that feature what virtual assistant? Now, I didn't get any answers on Twitter, and that's technically how you get to play along. If you want to play along with the trivia, is I'll ask you the question, answer it on Twitter using a hashtag LITNTrivia. Be sure to mention Tech News Gadget in your tweet. That's at Tech News Gadget. The first correct answer will be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. And seeing as how we didn't have anybody for episode 82, I'll go ahead and I'll give you the answer. The answer to last episode's question was Siri, and unfortunately I don't have anybody to give any credit to, so if you want bragging rights, here's what you do right now. I'm going to ask you a question. That question, I want you to leave your answer on Twitter along with a hashtag LITNTrivia. Be sure to mention at TechNewsGadget in your tweet. That way we can see it, and that way when we see the first correct answer, we will be able to announce it in the next episode along with your Twitter username. So if you're looking for bragging rights and the fact that your name will be plastered across the web, heard in over 59 countries worldwide, you might want to jump in on a trivia. The question for today's episode, in case you're wondering and you're ready to play, is, can you charge a laptop with a USB cable? Give us your correct answer on Twitter by using a hashtag LITNTrivia. Be sure to mention at TechNewsGadget in your tweet along with your answer. The first correct answer will be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. Moving on to today in tech history, because it always is beneficial to look back in history to see where we've come from and where we're heading to, hopefully heading to, but where we've come from, at least. We're not looking at tech future, we're looking at tech history. Seeing as how today is February 27th, 2019, on this day in history, in 1998, Apple discontinues the Newton. That's when Apple Computer decided it will discontinue development of the 5-year-old Newton operating system and all of its Newton OS-based products, including the MessagePad series and eMate 300. Apple will focus on developing the Macintosh, which is once again left as Apple's only computing platform, at least until the iPod, iPhone, and iPad come along a little while later. But if you're looking at the MessagePad or the eMate 300, essentially it was a bigger, fatter version of the iPod, iPad menagerie of gadgets. So it's a good thing they discontinued it, because they probably used the technology from that to improve along the way and actually make the iPod and iPad as it came out. Moving on this day in 1976, the National Security Agency's Harvest computer retires. Essentially, it was an IBM 7950, a supercomputer also known as the Harvest System, ceased operating after 14 years serving the National Security Agency, or the NSA. The Harvest was a one-of-a-kind adjunct to the Stretch computer and was delivered in 1962. It was designed for cryptanalysis by James H. Pamirine. I'm bad at names, sorry. Its electronics, built from the same kind of discrete transistors used for stretch were about twice as big physically as a stretch. Harvest added a number of small instructions to the stretch, which was attached to it and could not operate independently. So essentially when it shut down, the stretch was like, oh no, I can't stretch it out anymore, and died right there. But there you go. That's at least a little bit. Now we know what's going on behind the scenes, at least in 1976. Also, on this day in 2001, U.S. Robotics introduces the V.92 modem standard. Now, given that broadband internet had begun to take significant hold and that supporting V.92 required ISPs to upgrade their infrastructure, V.92 never really made much of an impact in the marketplace. And by V.92, if you want to think, you're like, well, what is this V.92 standard? Essentially, it looked like it was a telephone cord. We don't have those much, if any, at all anymore, because we have something called broadband, or, let's just say it made for a lot faster speeds. So thank goodness that V92 really didn't take off, otherwise we would have been stuck in Betamax, in terms of internet speeds. And finally, on this day in 2007, CompUSA announces that it will close 126 retail stores by June and restructure its remaining 103 stores. Eventually, those 103 stores also close. Now, keep in mind, once a major player in the computer retail sales market, CompUSA was eventually purchased by Systemax. Systemax now runs 35 stores bearing the CompUSA name. So it still lives on in a way, but just not as well known as, you know, it used to be. I kind of remember CompUSA probably was near where I lived in the area. I grew up in Milwaukee, so there was probably one in Milwaukee and Chicago and New York and Seattle and all the big cities, and kind of somewhat big. But yeah, that was CompUSA. So now that we have that all covered, let's head on over to the news of today. And I really got to work on that segue music. I'm gonna snap it in half. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna snap it in half, and that's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna make better music. If you guys have any music suggestions, please let me know. I would love to include some music suggestions from you guys. Hey, Facebook, Twitter, easiest, quickest way to get in touch with me. First up on the docket, coming in from Macworld, is an opinion piece which essentially says that Apple needs to get into the folding game and save us from years of bad phones. Now, these are not my opinions. This is by Michael Simon, staff writer at Macworld. So I just wanted to make that clear. It's not my own opinions. He says, when I first heard that Samsung was making a folding phone, I was excited. The idea that a phone could turn into a tablet intrigued me, and I closely followed the development of Samsung's display technology leading up to the launch of the Galaxy Fold. And then I saw it, and, well, my excitement waned. After dreams of giant screens opening to gianter screens, the Galaxy Fold has some clear first-gen compromises. The outside display is only 4.6 inches, which is laughably small for a 2019 smartphone. Sorry, iPhone SE lovers. It opens to a 7.6-inch screen that has a giant notch on the right side for the cameras, and it looks like it's thicker than two iPhones stacked on top of each other. A few days after the Galaxy Fold's introduction, Huawei took the wraps off of its own folding phone concept, and it's quite different. It's only 11 millimeters thick, has a 6-inch outside screen, and opens to a full 8-inch tablet with no notch. The controls, buttons, and USB-C port are on a stationary bar that doubles as a sort of handle and acts as a locking mechanism for the screen when folded. Now, keep in mind, if you're wondering, there are pictures that go along with this article, too. So if you want the show notes, head on over to technewsgadget.net/83. I eventually got to handle the Mate X for a few minutes, and I walked away impressed. While I would never consider spending upwards of $2,500 on a phone, even a cool new futuristic concept like this, I could see what Huawei was trying to do with the Mate X. Rather than assemble a prototype that doesn't consider usability or design like the Royole with the FlexPi, it's easy to see that Huawei has put serious effort into designing a folding phone that is both unique and familiar. The outside screen is as big as a normal smartphone. All three displays have clear purposes, and pocketability and holdability have been carefully considered. I even like the outside fold better than I thought I would. Now, there are issues such as a low-tech push button that ejects the case when folded, but for the most part, it's a really good first-gen device. But all the while, I thought, what would Apple do? While Huawei's and Samsung's first efforts are definitely better than, say, the crop of smartphones that were available when Apple launched the original iPhone, the Mate X and Galaxy Fold are definitely starting from a better place. But like the iPhone, Apple Watch, AirPods, and just about everything else coming out of Apple, we're not going to know how great a folding phone can be until Apple makes one. Now, I don't know why the standard is Apple. Oh, well, I know why, because it's Macworld. So obviously they want to really see what skin Apple has in the game and really bare its teeth and show really what we have in terms of smartphone improvements. So he goes on to complain about the screen. Is there texture? It's not really what it seems. It's big to small, not small to big. It's kind of a weird comparison. So there's a couple of things he likes and a couple of things he doesn't like. And ultimately he ends the article saying, I hope. Apple comes out with a better version, because, you know, he's an Apple lover, so, well, what do you think? Do you think Apple can be up to task, up to par, and exceed the demands and expectations of users? Are we a little bit too expectant? Should we tone it back a little bit, because this is kind of new technology, and it doesn't really help if we're too picky outright at the outset, but maybe it kind of will be. I don't know, we'll see. Let us know your thoughts on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. Moving on to the next article of today is, USB 3.2 is set to take over the world's computers, but not how you think. The USB Implementers Forum, an independent technology standards group, has officially rung in the era of USB 3.2 at MWC 2019. However, USB 3.1 and USB 3.0, as you know them, aren't going anywhere. Now, in case you're wondering, what MWC is, it's the Mobile World Conference or Congress that is happening currently. So if you're wondering what's with all the cell phone news and all this cell phone technology, well, that's kind of what's been going on all this week. So now you know. Now, while USB 3.2 marks a new level of data transfer speed reached for the standard at 20 gigabytes per second, it will also see previous USB technologies become rebranded into USB 3.2 in technical product listings. Now, this means that what is known as USB 3.1 Gen 1 today, which offers 5 gigs data transfer speeds, will henceforth be known as USB 3.2 Gen 1. Likewise, what we call USB 3.1 Gen 2 today will be called USB Gen 3.2 Gen 2, which still offers 10 gigabyte transfer speeds. Now, ports and devices carrying the new level of transfer speeds that USB 3.2 introduces, again, 20 gigabytes per second, will be known as USB 3.2 Gen 2x2. This increase in transfer speed is achieved by placing another 10 gigabytes data transfer channel within the connector, which is only possible in a Type-C format, but that is all but taking over smartphones and laptops. Now, what does that mean for consumers? Well, unknown exactly when we'll be seeing laptops and other devices bearing ports capable of those kind of speeds, but it's expected that manufacturers will soon be adopting the new naming conventions for current and upcoming products that will continue using 5 gigs and 10 gig USB ports. So it'll be up to manufacturers to come up with their own methods of educating consumers on the specifics of their products' USB ports. As always, of course, we'll be sure to take the manufacturers to task on this front too. So, probably won't be for a while yet, but just in case you're wondering, this USB 3.2, is it goes even faster? So, this is pretty good. I need to work on my joke. They didn't put any, Octavius, you didn't put any jokes in here, did you? No, you didn't? Okay, moving on. Next up on the docket of news that we have to go through today is Google Docs is adding grammar suggestions to help we write gooder. Now, I like how this title was composed. This comes to us from AndroidPolice.com. By the way, in case I forgot to mention, all of the articles mentioned today will be in the show notes for today's episode that you can find at technewsgadget.net/83. Now, like any other major word processor, Google Docs has offered spelling and grammar checks for some time. However, Google is now differentiating its own by adding machine translation-based grammar suggestions, basically going head-to-head with third-party services like Grammarly. First introduced back in July 2018 via an early adopter program, Google's grammar suggestions utilize a machine translation model that it worked with linguists to design. Grammar is a complicated subject, with a blog post mentioning that linguists disagree on whether a suggestion is correct one in four times, so it's nice to see Google putting in some real effort here. The suggestions appear as squiggly blue lines underneath the incorrect words and phrases, as you can see in the article image above. Google says that the suggestions will reach G Suite Basics, Business, and Enterprise consumers. So, basically, it'll be rolling out to everyone. Not clear exactly when its functionality will roll out. But it doesn't appear to be live currently. However, that may change. So, just in case you're wondering, what the heck are these blue squiggly lines? Yep, they're essentially taking over Grammarly in Google Docs now. So, there you have it. All right, now on to the big news happening today. Did you know even Stardew Valley has a competitive esports scene? What? Like, what? No, I'm not making this up. Now, most people play farming simulator Stardew Valley to wind down or relax because it's not really an action-packed game or such objective-based or a strategy, team fight building, run down the enemy team and win kind of game. It's the sort of game where an exciting turn of events includes figuring out that your bae will love you if you give them an egg. Sure, some people play to min-max their yields, but even so, it's hard to imagine this sort of thing that should be shoutcasted or broadcasted, right? And yet, today, Twitch is hosting an esports event where players are competing against one another in Stardew Valley. The goal is to collect the most gold or bundles before the end of the game. Accomplishing that requires the typical Stardew Valley gameplay we all know and love. Farming, fishing, foraging, spelunking, and so on. But there are also multiple commentators who hype up the action as it unfolds. It's surreal to watch and a testament to the way players can expand the way we consume and enjoy games. And in case you missed the live show, they'll probably have a replay available on Twitch or YouTube somewhere. I'm not sure what the... What's the title of it called? I don't know. This event is happening today to celebrate the third anniversary of Stardew Valley's release. Even the creator, Eric Barone, was invited onto the stream to give fans a quick note. And I think he speaks for everyone when he said that Stardew Valley esports is frankly not something I ever expected to see. So, there you have it. You could probably look it up, Stardew Valley esports, somewhere on Twitch or YouTube, and enjoy. I'm not making this up. Go check it out. Speaking of getting charged up, well, Energizer's P18 K-Pop is basically a giant battery with a smartphone built into it. Nope, not making this up. Along with the other goofy cell phone news coming out this week, this is the future you asked for, and this is the future you're getting. When people read smartphone reviews, one of the first things they want to know is whether the battery life is going to be sufficient for their uses. Well, what if the battery life was the only stat that mattered? At MWC in Barcelona, phone maker Avenir Telecom is turning heads with an Energizer-branded behemoth that packs a punch. How much of a punch are you talking? The P18K Pop has a truly massive 18,000 mAh battery built in. The manufacturer says that you could play videos for two straight days without depleting the battery. Now, by comparison, the phone in your pocket probably has a battery in a 2500 to 3500 mAh range, so this thing would likely be able to keep you going and going and going with several days of regular usage. Consumers haven't always been psyched about manufacturers' never-ending desire to trim thickness from their phones. Hey, it's not an issue for the P18K Pop, which is 18 millimeters thick at its thinnest point. Hilariously enough, the thing is built as all get out but manages not to have a headphone jack. It's abundantly clear, unclear, or clear how big the market is for this chunkster, but Paris-based Avenir Telecom says they will start shipping them to consumers sometime this summer. And sorry, I'm like still trying to wrap my head around it. I got pictures about the whole entire thing. Apparently yesterday was the last day for the Mobile World Congress 2019 in Barcelona. So just wrapping up news of the weird, but look at this phone. It's like, looking at this phone and not to mention the battery life that goes along with it, is quite impressive. Pretty interesting screen to go along with it, but the phone, I'm telling you, looks like a like a brick. If you were to take a regular brick and then shave 25% off of it or a quarter off of it and then keep that quarter that you shaved off, that's how big the phone is. It's beefy. It's heavy. It looks like an old version, like Gen 1 iPhone. But, man, screen looks okay for the most part. But, hey, if you want this nice, big, juicy phone to keep you going for 2 solid straight days of watching video, this one will wet your whistle. So, enjoy. Hopping on over to the gaming news a little bit. Well, Epic is getting sued yet again for putting the Running Man dance in Fortnite. Unbelievable. I know. I swear. If I see one more article... Okay, I've seen one enough article. I'm going to rant on it a little bit. So, you've been warned. Fortnite creator Epic Games is facing yet another lawsuit over copying dance emotes without permission. Two former University of Maryland basketball players have sued the company for its Running Man Fortnite emote, which allegedly copies a dance they popularized in 2016. You remember the Running Man? Apparently they coined it. Their complaint accuses Epic of copyright infringement and violating the player's publicity rights, arguing that the publisher has consistently sought to exploit African-American talent, in particular in Fortnite, by copying their dances and movement. Now, Brantley and Nickens say they created the distinctive and immediately recognizable dance behind the Running Man Challenge, a viral phenomenon that got them invited onto the Ellen DeGeneres Show for a performance. Last year, Epic introduced an extremely similar-looking Fortnite emote called Running Man. They claim that the dance is synonymous with them and that Epic shouldn't be able to copy it without getting permission or offering compensation. You know, you guys, okay, I'm just going to say it right now. For you bigwigs who think you just can take money and fling it around and try to get publicity off of it or sue a company and get money from it, you guys are dumb. but I like the way that they actually word this whole thing is that they claim that the dance is synonymous with them. It seems to be a common complaint. Epic already faces lawsuits from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air star Alfonso Ribeiro, rappers 2 Million, Blackboy JB, and viral stars Orange Shirt Kid and Backpack Kid. It's also a largely untested and controversial one, since dance moves can only be copyrighted if they're sufficiently complex, and even if the dance can be copyrighted, it's not always clear who owns those rights. The U.S. Copyright Office suggested that Ribeiro's dance might be owned by a network, for instance. So, see, this is where you get things really, really, and you jump into this entire gray area. Now, here's what I am going to say about this, a little bit rant-wise and a little bit of education-wise, if you want to say it. Is, you know, I'm fairly certain Epic went into this with a whole bunch of lawyers, a whole bunch of thought, a whole bunch of plans behind the scenes, so they're not just going, oh no, we put a dance in and you shouldn't have put in because it was somebody else's. No, I think they have a fairly good idea behind what they're doing, and what they're doing is probably, according to them, perfectly fine and fair. And then you have these dancers who somehow say, well, these dances are coined specifically to me, because when they think of it, it's synonymous to me. Here's where it gets interesting. If I were to say the phrase moonwalk, who would you think of immediately? Exactly. Michael Jackson. You want to know why? Because that dance and his style of dance is specifically tied to him. It's synonymous. People know who it is. Now, the Running Man? Who did that? I don't know. Just some viral trend challenge I saw online. Is this a game? I saw it in a game or another game or this game. How about Backpack Kid? Yep. That one too. Except they don't call it really Backpack Kid. How about all these really... It looks like simple basic dance moves where nobody knows who did it and nobody cares. So really the point is, I'm thinking a lot of these people want attention and or money just for the sake of trying to, I want money off of something that went famous because I couldn't really think about what to do in terms of copyright and actually branding it and making it synonymous to me and being actually Michael Jackson. You know what? Maybe y'all, dancers, and supposed viral phenomenons really need to take a page out of Michael Jackson's book and see how he did it. Because I can guarantee you there, he's done more work and effort and energy into putting that into play than you guys did saying, well, I danced on YouTube, I'm copyright. Okay, now you're sounding stupid. So I think that's all I'm going to say on the subject. Because if I say anymore, I'm going to like flip a lid. Because it's just getting ridiculously stupid. I don't know. Am I the only one here who thinks this is stupid? It's like, oh, Fortnite's getting sued again. Oh, they're getting sued again. Oh, they're getting sued again. What's the big deal? I don't know. Did somebody get his foot stuck in his rear end? I don't know. Help him pull it out. And actually, no. Actually, watch him pull it out on his own, but then laugh at him. So that's what we're going to say there. Okay. I've gone and said too much. So let me know on Twitter. Or Facebook, if I'm crazy or not crazy, or what your thoughts are. I'd love to hear from you guys. All right, well, ending it on a good note, Fortnite Season 8 is right around the corner. Teasers that they have going on so far, and for those of you who've been living under a rock, or for those of you who've been taking a break from Fortnite for a little bit, and wondering, well, what does Season 8 have to offer? Well, Season 7 was off to a pretty interesting start, and Season 6, well, Season 8 is coming up later this week. Epic is following its usual routine of dropping daily teaser images in the lead-up. Now, each of these images is accompanied by a poem, and all of this seems clearly designated to suggest that Season 8 will have some kind of pirate theme, with references to buried treasure and seafaring threats with spooky pirate imagery. And if you haven't heard it from Ninja already, well, the first teaser references X marks the spot and a treasure with an image of a hook. The second has an image of a snake and warns you to beware those who arrive on the waves. The third and final one so far shows a tiger-like face promising you can awaken beasts of fire and ash. Teaser 3 might even reveal our first look at one of Season 8's first new skins. The teasers are counting down days until Season 8 starts on Thursday, February 28th. Now, given the poem, it seems likely that the players will be able to hunt for loot in buried treasure form, and there may be some form of AI opponent, maybe, or creatures arriving on ships, maybe? New teasers are dropping every day, so we may see even more specific hints as time goes on. As pointed out by James Jarvis on Twitter, the images are forming a pattern that looks conspicuously like a stylized skull. This means that you have just a few days left to unlock the prisoner skin levels and waterfall challenges to earn your rewards. When a new season rolls over, it will bring on an all-new battle pass, which you can earn for free this time around, with its own challenges and skins and new game mechanics. Season 7 ends this week, just prior to the start of Season 8. Fortnite has become known for its big seasonal changeover events, each of which changes its gameplay in some significant ways. So far, this is one big distinguishing factor it has taken against the new challenger in a battle royale genre, Apex Legends. That game, for history's sake, has taken off quite quickly, 25 million players in a matter of a week, but Epic Games says Fortnite is still doing fine for itself. It just set a new record and announced a massive prize pool for its esports tournaments. So, there you have it. That is all the news that I have for today. And I'll wrap up this episode of The Latest in Tech News. Thanks so much for tuning in. New episodes every Wednesday and Friday. The Latest in Tech News is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, and everywhere else podcasts are heard. By the way, if we missed something on the show that you wanted to hear today, send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or visit technewsgadget.net and click on Submit News. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you could get us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe as well. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. For the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, be sure to head on over to technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.